All right, welcome back to the Dan Time Podcast. Dan McArdle here, bringing you another exciting episode, and I can't believe it's number 98. So knocking on our centennial episode in a couple weeks here, and the occasion, like you saw, the calendar fell, it falls where it wants to, and who did I talk to a couple weeks ago? I think it was Travis for his birthday or something. We had May 4th on a Sunday. Yeah, May 4th last. So we did a Best of Travis last week. I hope you enjoyed that. Some of you might listen to every second of every episode. So if you did, maybe some of that was redundant. But for the large majority of you, I try to pull some select material for you. Okay. Today, as you know, is Mother's Day, a very important day on the calendar for a lot of people. If you're listening and you didn't have the best relationship with your mom, some of these holidays pop up on the calendar and you're thinking, well, that's great for everybody else, but not so great for me. If that was the case, you know, I recognize those listeners. So with that in mind, and that's actually not why I'm trying to segue into explaining this guest today. But I've got my dear old dad back on the show, and you might remember him from the Father's Day episode about a year ago or last June. And you might be wondering, Dan, what are you doing? It's Mother's Day. Get your mom on the line. How rude. Well, there's a reason why we're doing this. And if you've been listening for a while, you know that I try to go outside the box a little bit. So that's what we're doing today. I did have a conversation, as far as you're concerned, with my mother earlier today, wished her a happy Mother's Day. And today, and I want to do some of this as we kind of get over the 100th episode, I would like to talk about people who are perhaps not around anymore. They're from a bygone era, from another century, or what have you. And I've got my dad on we can't talk for hours about this, but we can talk for a little bit, to talk about his mother, my grandmother, who I really only have childhood memories of. And I'm really excited to do this and very pleased to welcome back my father, Bob McArdle. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Daniel. It is Mother's Day, and I appreciate you squeezing me in, because you've got a lot of mothers in your life. I mean, you got a wife, you got, you know, mother-in-law, you got you know, your own mother, of course. And as we start, I was just thinking just something about your own mother. When she moved to New York, we were not married at the time, and she was in Atlanta and I was in New York, and it just wasn't working out, the long distance romance. And I said, look, I can't move back to Atlanta, but you could possibly move up to New York. And this is a little girl from Rock Chapel, Georgia. Population 119 people to come to New York City and live on 14th Street. So I just want to kick this off a little bit by the word mother, as it is said in New York City, is a little bit different than other places. Some places it's mama, some places it's mother, some places mom, whatever. But anyway, really quick, her first day in New York City, this is your mother, Janie. She's going down the subway to get on the subway to go for a job interview in New York City. And she has to stop because they're coming up the subway with a body bag of somebody who has died in the subway. And she has to stand to one side. Little girl from Rock Chapel, Georgia, less than 100 people. So she goes down. She's counted out her money, and it was 25 cents to get a token. And she didn't realize she just needed to give them a quarter. And the guy behind the counter was a real jerk. And so she's counted it out, and she had a few pennies in there, and she shoved it in, and she said, I counted it all, it's correct. And he pushes it back and says, no, it's not correct, it's wrong. And she counts it out back again, and she pushes it back, and she says, I've counted it three times now, I know it's right. And so he takes the money to one side, but he takes the token where she can't reach it under the cage. And then he flips his finger to flip the token, and it hits the sidewalk, and rolls around for her to go get it. And he looks at her and he says, "Your mother."
Mm.
So with that introduction, we can go forward now.
I do remember hearing that story, and wow, what a cold splash of water for Mom. Welcome to New York.
Just imagine, you grew up in a town of 100 people, and now there's more than 100 people that live in your building. So anyway, I'm all yours.
Love that story. I mean, I like it now, I'm sure, at the time. And I can always picture Mom in these scenarios. Maybe what she wanted to say. I'm sure she's just not used to that type of interaction, but...
Yeah, I don't think they said your mother in Rock Chapel, Georgia. I just don't think that happened. But anyway, you wanted to talk about my mother, your grandmother. But anyway, I don't mean to take over your show. I've got a few things to tell you, but you kick it off.
Mary Rose Crowe McArdle, my paternal grandmother, and I knew her. I was out in the yard playing with my oldest son, Warren, who's 7 and a half, call it, and almost 8. And I was thinking, how old was I when Cammy died? And doing the math, I was about 8. I was 8, not quite 9. And so I have these select memories of her. I still vividly remember her voice, or the way that she would speak to me. I can kind of sound it out, the "Hey, sugar." There's a lot I don't know, and there's pictures that I've seen. That's all great. And a lot of people, I think, you know, if your grandparents weren't around a long time, you do have a lot of nice photographs to look at, and you get around the extended family from time to time, and they tell you a few things, but we don't really know that much unless you had them around for most of into your adulthood. So that's something I was curious about today. My dad was the second of 6 children. And one thing we were talking about earlier was I was always kind of fascinated. What's it like when you're old enough to have memories, 5 or 6, and there's you and an older sister, then you got a younger sister, then you got another one on the way. How about, what was the earliest age that you remember Gammy, or your mother, walking around the house very, very pregnant, and you maybe ask her, "Hey, what's that in your belly?" Or why are you so... what are you carrying there? Do you have memories of Gammy being pregnant?
I do have very vivid memories of Mother, as we called her. She always insisted that we call her Mother, not Mom, not Mommy, but it was Mother. It was very formal that we called her Mother, and quite frankly, it's hard not to remember her pregnant because. She was pregnant, you know, most of, you know, my early life. I did some quick math, and Serena, the oldest, was born in 1943, and Rosemary was born in 1956. That's 13 years, and she had 16 children in 13 years. She also had 4 miscarriages. 6. Yeah, 6 in 13 years. So, I mean, she was shooting them out. You know, she was fulfilling the Catholic Church's proclamation, you know, to multiply.
You did mention, I usually don't butt in, but the 4 miscarriages, I have been generally familiar, or now that you bring it up, back then, and I guess every situation is different, but do you remember there being kind of a sorrow that your mother carried during those periods where that happened, or did you not really notice much amiss?
You know, I really don't, because she never expressed any pain or, you know, discomfort or what have you. I only learned about the miscarriages later in life because, I mean, by the time Rosemary was born, you know, that was 1956. So I was, what, maybe 12. So, no, I would not have been, you know, I only learned about it afterwards. And then I started doing the calculation saying you had 6 children in 13 years. That's 1 every 2 years. And then you also lost 3, you know, so there could have been 10. Now, we always laugh about, well, who would that cut out? I mean, I was in, Serena was in, But I don't know, Margaret, Martina, you know, who could have been out in all those years? But anyway, just the fact that she was pregnant most of her life, most of her, not life, but most of that time between, you know, 1943 and 1956.
Also, the sequence where there's a girl, then there's a boy, then there's a girl, then there's a girl, then there's another boy. But the sequence when you're kind of still a kid, and it's you and three girls, if that's right, as they're coming along, is there less and less time for little Robert? Are you able to access your mother with just random questions? Are you able to pull on the apron, and or she's kind of saying, "Hey, get out of the house. It's a beautiful day. You need to stay out. Just get out of here." What was that like at that age?
It was not good from my point of view as I look back on it. Not good at all. I mean, you know, I lived in a house of women, and you know, my dad, he worked, you know, shift work. So I mean, he was really never home. So it was just me and all these women. And if you ever live with a bunch of women, and I mean this respectfully to your listeners and your subscribers and even to my sisters, you know, but I liken it. I like to tell the story was, you know, I never had a dry towel in my life until I went off to college, because I was there was me and three sisters. And, you know, they took baths, and, you know, when you take a bath, I mean, I'm pretty good with one towel. I can get away with really a half a towel. I mean, a towel for me would last 3 days. You know, they would take three towels for each bath. So, I mean, we only had so much money. There was so many times. Anyway, just the point was there were all these, and then there was Easter, and, you know, Easter Sunday or Saturday night before Easter, they put all this shit on their hair that just stunk like hell. I mean, it was just smelled like ammonia or something. I had to leave the house to get out of it. And so I was just living with all these girls and all the stuff that they had to do. And then, oh, there's Robert, as she called me, not Robert, but right. Robert. There was Robert over here, and I'm out playing baseball. I'm riding my bicycle. I'm smoking cigarettes at 10 years old. I'm doing stuff that little boys do, you know, and then I can't get a dry towel. And finally, when I went to college, you know, I was able to take a shower with a dry towel. So that was what it was like living up with my sisters, and I love them dearly. And even today I love them dearly, but those days, you know, no dry towel is pretty tough.
I could just picture that, and would they hang them up at least over that shower bar to dry, or were they crumpled? Did you have to pick up something off the floor and just, oh, of course, this is soaking wet?
Well, Daniel, you said the magic word. You said shower bar. We had a three-bedroom, one-bathroom house for eight people. So, you know, mother and daddy had a bedroom. I had a bedroom, and the four girls had a bedroom, and then we had this one bathroom. The shower, we didn't know what a shower. We read something about in advanced civilization there's going to be showers someday, but we just had a bathtub, and you filled up the bathtub, and of course it was just dirty as it could be because, you know, they didn't clean anything. So anyway, the tiles were just piled up in the floor in the corner. So no. There were no hanging towels.
What a way to live. We could spend a whole episode just talking about your experience as a youth with those girls and all that, but let's kind of shift forward a few years. How's your relationship with your mother at this time when you're college age? But, you know, not everybody's going to college at that time. Tell me how the University of Alabama comes into play, and is she proud of you? Are you guys talking on the phone a lot?
Well, I mean, first of all, there were no phones. You said talk on the phone. No, we had a rotary dial phone, one line. So there was no phones, but to answer your question more succinctly, I really had a great relationship with her, And mother, or as we later started to call her Gammy, because that was her, you know, the grandchildren named her that. But anyway, she had this unique ability to be the, I mean, if everyone in the world could have a mother like Mary Rose Grove McArdle, this would be a much better world, because she had six children and we were all different, whatever, but she made all six of us feel like we were her favorites. She made me feel like I was her favorite, you know, and we play that back and forth with everybody now, but she just had that ability to do that. As I got a little bit older, more in high school, and then we began to assume a little bit more of the financial obligation to keep the family household going, in just in terms of food and rent and what have you. And so we all had part-time jobs. I mean, starting at age 13, I was cutting grass or doing something, and the girls, you know, later were working, you know, at part-time jobs, and we all brought money home. So we were sort of the typical Irish Catholic, we weren't impoverished, but we were on the border. We got free lunch at school, and we got some other benefits, what have you. But we all chipped money into the pot every month to make sure the rent was paid, and there was food on the table. So, you know, I would have conversations with her as I got older, you know, about that, just on a financial basis. And then as I got into college, you know, we would have, you know, I was the only one in the family, in all the McArdle family, not the Crow family, but the McArdle family, that went to college. And I had loans and what have you. So she was very, very proud of me. And I was very financially supportive. And I could take this a lot further along, but I think you get the point.
Yeah, and I also wanted to, as you were talking there about the family being a strong unit, the holiday season has always been a special time. When I was growing up, I knew that Christmas time was very important to you, because we always, from the time I was very young, even here in the past several years, we a little more time apart or time between our gatherings, but there's always these, what we call the hoard. For those of you listening, there's a name for our extended family, the hoard. When did you know that Christmas was a big deal in your house? Do you know how old you were, and did your mother and Gammy to me, did she really prioritize Christmas? And you guys aren't upper middle class, certainly, or even middle class, but are you happy around the holidays?
You know, that is such an insightful question that goes right to the psyche of growing up in a family like I did. But I do remember that Christmas, you got one toy, not two dolls or $300. You got one toy. I hope you include this in the thing. You had to choose real quick what it was you wanted. So you got one toy, and then you had a stocking, and the stocking would have some fruit in it and some candy. But it would be like, you know, fruit, but it would be more like walnuts, but they were hard walnuts. You had to crack them to get them open. There'd be some walnuts and some candy in the stocking, and then there would be the one toy that you wanted. So you had to choose. But generally, you know, you would get that one toy. And I remember getting a pool table. It was a small, we talk about pool tables. I mean, this thing was like 14 inches by 30 inches. God knows they had to take out a loan or get some money from somebody, but it was just this really small pool table with pool balls, you know, about one inch. Anyway, so that was my toy that year. Other times it would be, you know, a glove, a baseball glove. But you get the point. You got the one toy.
Deal.
Oh yeah, I mean it was a big effing deal. And and of course the girls, you know, they'd get, you know, $300 or whatever. But, you know, they'd get whatever they wanted. So I was always happy at Christmas.
Okay, how about this? Did you ever go, or can you remember being 8, 9, or 10, or 11, and going with your mother to anywhere in public, the store or somewhere to pay the gas bill, where you got to stand in line, you got to interact with people? Did you ever observe, I'm sure you did, but do you remember how she handled herself in public? Because I think that's something that children observe. I certainly remember, you know, how you interacted with somebody at a hotel desk or a restaurant server or wherever. Same with mom. Did you notice things like that, and were there some takeaways?
Oh, Daniel, you you are the journalist. I mean, you know, you really should make a living in journalism, but they don't pay you any money. Yeah. But they don't pay you any money, you know, picking up shit. You know, pays you a lot more money than but anyway, you're exactly right. Yes. I mean, she would always say, okay, now we're going to go into this store, and you don't have to say anything. You just let me handle it, or whatever the whatever it was going to be. Or maybe we were going to get a pair of shoes, and she would get a pair of shoes, and she would stick, you know, cardboard in the bottom of the shoes so that it didn't show out. And but when we ever went out in public, it was like, we have no problems. We're just as rich as everybody in Lower Hensley. And we're here to pay the power bill so you can get the power turned back on because it's been turned off for 4 days or something.
Yeah.
And she would have to take us with her to do that. But she just had such class and such, she could talk in a form that just, it wasn't begging. It wasn't anything. She was just, she would be there and she'd have on her perfect dress with a hat, not a veil. She only wore the veil to church, but she would have she'd be dressed up, and we'd go down to the power company, and she would pay the power to, you know, get the power turned back on, which had been off for a week. And but that was just her style.
She knew how to be effective when it was time to get something accomplished like that.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, and I don't know how you're going to wove this back into the interview or anything, but she came from a very prominent family in Mississippi, in Meridian, Mississippi, and the family was quite well off, and but her father died in an automobile accident at a very early age, when she was only like 6 years old or something. He was a mm-hmm. banker, but you know, this was just before the Depression. Just before the war and just before everything else that went bad. So she did grow up in a family that they were affluent, but her mother knew we're really not as affluent as we were before the Depression and the crash, you know, and the war. I mean, we've got some money in the bank or what have you. We talk about that on another episode, but you know, I mean, her family was quite well off and quite well educated, but here we are in.
And some perspective, she was born in, and correct me if I'm wrong, 1916?
Yeah, 1916, 1917, yeah, exactly.
So around the Depression, she's just a young girl when that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, she went off to St. Vincent's Nursing School in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, somebody had to pay for that, you know, in 1930 something. This is the height of Depression. And so she goes off to nursing school there, and then she meets Granddaddy McArdle, which is a whole nother story about how they met and everything else we can talk about some other time. But, you know, they were able to pay her tuition, you know, to go to this private Catholic nursing school in Birmingham. And come out of it, you know, with an RN degree, you know, and then, you know, go on. And I think she only practiced as a nurse for several years before she started having all these babies.
How about as the years move on and you've now started a family and all three of us are born and it's Mother's Day 1982 or something, Are you calling her like clockwork at a certain time back then? Do you know when you can reach her? Are you having conversations? How? Yeah, the Mother's Day connection and just how you're communicating with Gammy as you're kind of globetrotting, so to speak.
Globetrotting is a great word for me. I mean, being the first college graduate and, going into the military and getting my, I made captain. And so I was sort of a success story. And I was full of it. It filled my head with a bunch of shit, which really wasn't all that important. But at the time, I always called her every Sunday. It didn't matter where I was in the world or when I was in Germany. I would call her as much as I could. But anyway, when I came back and I got on the merry-go-round, chasing the brass ring, moving from New York to Chicago to Pittsburgh, to all that stuff that you went through, I still, every Sunday, I would call Gammy, to talk to her. And it would always be in the afternoon because I knew that she had gone to church or whatever. So we talked at least once a week all those years.